Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 115 of season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today on the basically final week of this season is Sean German of the Next Team Podcast. Welcome back to the show, Sean.
Oh, thank you very much. It's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's again, as I said last season also, it's not the same not recording with you, across the desk, but still, you know, it's still fun.
We have to make do, that. You know.
Exactly.
The show must go on. Yeah.
That it must, especially when we're 5,000 miles apart and... You know, and I don't have any plans to travel in the near future. So,
right. Yeah. So someday I'll have to return the favor and record. You know, I'll have to visit your recording studio.
You're more than welcome to come to Israel whenever you want. And we will gladly find time to host you.
Oh, thank you. Thank
you. You're welcome. Just let me know when you're coming. You know,
okay.
I need just a few hours preparation.
You know, a little warning. Yeah.
A little bit of warning. So episode 115 begins with Holly pausing before jumping and ends with Sam Coleman showing she's a sentimental at heart. Mm-hmm. So basically, you know, this whole week we've been dealing with, you know, getting rid of the bad guys, the planes finding ways of landing, which we'll talk a little bit about in the next few days also about some of the strange things that happened there. But basically the Northeast plane has stopped, and you know, we saw yesterday some of the passengers getting out and, you know, jumping onto the chute and stuff like that. And this minute opens with Holly standing in the doorway. She looks a little scared because she's holding on with dear life to both sides of the door frame. Did you notice that?
Yes, I did. And, yeah.
And she's also being held up by three people. You know, the two stewardesses and the old lady with the taser. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it's that it looks as if, you know, she wants to jump, but they don't want to let her. That type of thing. You know, like, I got to get out of here. But, you know, they're holding her back or something like that. You know, it's not as if they're trying to push her out the door or anything.
Yeah. And her, it looks like, I don't know, over like her knees are buckling and maybe they're helping her like steady her and keep her upright. But, it does seem unusual that at this point, like you'd think they'd want to get people off the plane and kind of keep the flow moving down the slide. But,
That's right.
they are steadying her and holding her still and not pushing her out off the plane and down the slide.
Right. It could be that they're just like standing there for like the picture before, you know, they move along, you know, like someone standing there with a camera getting ready to take a picture of them.
Yeah. I was thinking if you've ever been on a cruise, which I've only done, I think twice in my life, but like a 7-day Caribbean cruise or Mediterranean cruise, but, at least the two times I did something like that, they have someone, you know, a photographer waiting with a scenic background as you board the boat. When you first get on at the start of the cruise, they take everyone's picture, and then they, like later that evening, they're available and you can buy them. So, maybe they do something similar for airplane disasters.
Could be.
Take your picture.
I mean, I was on a cruise also. I think we went four summers ago. We were on a cruise. Basically, they took our picture also. I don't think we paid for it. I don't think we got one. I think we just took our own, pictures. You know, I think that's what it was more or less. It just looks a little strange.
Yeah. Do they still do the thing? And this is going way back on holiday things or they would take your picture and I don't even know what to call it. They would put it in a little, almost like a ViewMaster viewer type thing, a little picture viewer that you could hold up to the light. Only it'd be just like this little plastic dongle with only the single picture. but that way you could carry the picture around with you. But it was something maybe an inch long and half an inch in diameter, just a little.
You mean what they used to, I know what you're talking about. There's a keychain.
Mm-hmm.
It was a keychain type of thing where you can look into it and it's like a kaleidoscope type of thing. And then, it's a small little keychain. Yeah. I don't think I've seen those in years, but I remember them.
A little keychain kaleidoscope and you'd have your picture. I remember going to the Catskills with my grandparents in like the 70s and they would, take a group picture and then put it in one of those. Yeah. Little kaleidoscope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess they don't do that on cruises anymore.
I guess not. I don't know. They didn't on the one that we were on.
Yeah. But maybe in the 80s they did it for airplane disasters.
Maybe. Well, the 90.
Or the 90.
1990.
Yeah. There you go. Holly pauses a moment before exiting the plane.
Yes, she's pausing, and we hear screaming in the background because we saw it yesterday also that John is like running and screaming, Holly, yeah. Holly, like, Holly,
Stella, Adrian, exactly. Oh, Adrian, it's Holly.
That's right.
Yeah, trying to find his wife through the medals and the masses of people escaping the disaster.
That's right, and it. It's funny that, I mean, we'll see a little bit later over the next couple of days how close all of these planes are to one another. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this was the first plane to land. So you'd think that John would have gotten there first.
Right.
We know that Holly's probably like in business class or first class. So she should be theoretically one of the first to get out.
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of people already on the ground. So I don't know. And they change the music a little bit, and we get a shot of John, you know, walking briskly towards the plane. You know, it's a good thing he knows which plane Holly is on. It's a good thing there's only one plane from each of these different airlines. You know, like what would he have done if there were three Northeast airlines that were landing? You know, only one from LA, the other two from, I don't know, Boston and Detroit. Who knows? You know.
Yeah, it would have been a lot more confusion there.
Because, I mean, that's the way it works today. You don't go to the airport and see just one, one plane from American Airlines and one plane from, I'm trying to even remember which airlines are still around, you know.
TWA, I don't think that's...
No, TWA isn't around anymore that I know. Delta's still around. So, Delta. Okay. So one Delta and one American Airlines and one... I don't know.
I wonder if that was on purpose. So we don't have, people like us that like to nitpick things wondering, well, how does John know which plane Holly's on? Well, then they're like, well, okay, we'll just have each plane be from a different airline. And there you go.
That's right. I mean, if
Marty podcaster.
A few months ago, we saw the boards. And we saw where all the airlines were from. I'm trying to remember if there was more than one from different places. Every airline is different.
Okay.
You know, on the first shot that we have here, we have 3, 6, 9. We have 10 airlines, and they're all completely different airlines. And then in the second shot, it has the airlines also. And... there are a few that you have departures and arrivals. So like you have the HEA airline where it's departing to Chicago, but you also have an HEA arriving from Newark. But on the board of arrivals and on the board of departures, none of them repeat themselves on the same board.
Okay.
So there we go. We have an answer to that. They decided that they're going to make brand new airlines for every single one of them so that we don't have to worry about trying to remember who's on which airline. Then we get a shot of John, and you can tell that it's really cold because of the air, the puff of air coming out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
We can see
their breath. We can see if the snow lands in their hair, it doesn't melt right away.
Well, you do know that there's no real snow in any frame in this movie.
I know.
It's all
I'm trying to keep up the illusion.
No. I'm saying they just had a lot of problems when they were making this movie, that they weren't able to get any real snow. Everything just had mishap after mishap after mishap.
Snow's tough. I guess they should add that to like the old saying of never work with children, animals, or snow. Just because, this would not be the first production that had such issues with, weather and snow. And always seems like it doesn't snow when you want it, and then when you don't want it, that's when the snow comes. It's very misbehaving.
Correct. That's right. And part of the problem is, I mean, this movie is it needs the snow for its plot. So if anyone wants to go and listen to the commentary from Ernie Harland, you should, because he talks all about it, about how difficult it was. Dealing with all the different types of fake snow that they needed to do. You know, they even like trucked in snow, and then when they were getting ready to take it out, it had all frozen, and then it was like pieces of ice instead of the snow. Yeah, they really didn't do well with that one.
Yeah they had similar issues on the set of Groundhog Day. John Ramis talks about having similar issues. Now snow
Harold
isn't quite
Harold
as much of a Oh, sorry, thank you. Harold Ramis, but I don't know where my head's at.
Harold Ramis, makes sense.
Harold Ramis talks about similar issues on the set of Groundhog Day, where snow isn't quite as much of a character as it is in this film, but it does play into some of the scenes, and they also had some challenges there, which you can hear about more on my podcast, Groundhog Minute, so check that out.
There you go.
Get that plug in.
That's the great way to do it. You know, nothing about that. Nothing wrong with that. The music changes and we get like melodramatic music, you know, as John is searching for Holly, and then he looks up, and then we get a shot of her looking down, and we see their eyes lock. Yes. You know, and John finally finds the Northeast Airline plane, and then we see Holly, you know, jump down on the chute and comes right into his arms. You know, very, very emotional, very romantic, the way that they do it. And then we hear someone scream in the back, "Come on, we got you. Oh, you're going to be all right, ma'am." And then the two of them embrace as a firefighter puts a blanket on her. And they start hugging again. And then John says, "Oh, God, oh, baby, I thought I was never going to see you again." And she responds, "That's what I thought about you." And then he says, "I love you so much." And then, you know, as they're embracing, you can also see like the blood smears on her face from his bandages, you know, that have now opened up once again. And then
he's quite bloody in this scene.
Yeah, he really is. But it shows her love for him, that she's still willing to hug him, you know, with all the blood coming out of his body.
Yeah.
With all the blood smearing all over her clothes and her face. You know, and then, you know, he says, "I love you so much." And she says, "They told me there were terrorists at the airport."
I heard that too.
Think about that. If someone says to you, "I love you so much," the proper response is not, "They told me there were terrorists at the airport." You know, I dare anybody, yourself included, Sean, if your significant other says to you, "I love you so much," and you respond, "But they told me there were terrorists at the airport," you know, someone's going to be sleeping on the couch.
I might try that line, and then I may immediately get a chance to test your hospitality, because I may need a place to stay if I ever.
Well, you're gonna have to get on a plane for that, but yeah. No problem.
but that is an odd sort of, it's an odd response and just an odd thing to say, because obviously, I mean, well, I guess maybe, she hasn't been at the airport, but it certainly isn't for our benefit. Like, as the audience, like, why would the writers have, you know, just the character say that line? Like, we know, we saw the terrorists. Like, we know there are terrorists at the airport. You don't have to tell us.
No, but she's telling John, because maybe John doesn't know.
That's true.
Yeah. Because what does John have to do with terrorists? What does John have to, if you hear the word terrorist, John is completely on the other side of the building. You know, he's not there. He's running away.
Nothing to do with it. Right.
That's right. So I don't know. A very interesting response. And if we want to dissect it, who told her that there were terrorists at the airport? You know, who told her? She said, "They told me."
Yeah.
Who? Thornburg?
Which you've heard that from Thornburg, or maybe after they landed, maybe they, the, From the stewardesses, the airline attendants?
I mean, they know something's going on.
Right.
Okay, and anyone who's listening to the news report knows something is going on about terrorists or whatever it is. But it's just very strange for her to say, they told me there were terrorists. It's a strange way of saying it. You know, we'll see later if it's actually in the script.
Mm-hmm. Now, it could have been that she mentions it because it was just mentioned to her, because maybe they didn't, you know, Thornburg wasn't relaying what he was, you know, what he knew. And they didn't, you know, they didn't on the plane, they really didn't know what was going on. But then once they've landed, they see all the emergency vehicles and the flashing lights on the runway and everything else that's going on. So maybe there was, you know, maybe that, you know, the passengers are wondering, hey, what's, you know, why is everything so hectic here on the ground? And then that's maybe they, you know, an announcement is made. Oh, there were, you know, there were terrorists at the airport. And that's why we have, you know, the fire trucks and the police and all the big response that you have.
Exactly. They say, attention, ladies and gentlemen, please get off the plane in an orderly fashion because there were terrorists here, but there no longer
there were terrorists. Yeah. There were terrorists at the airport.
So you see, there you go. There's the they who told them that there were terrorists at the airport.
Yeah.
And I mean, John does have a great response. He goes, yeah, I heard that too.
Always, you know, downplaying, always the underplay, the casual John McClane. It's like, yeah, I might have heard something about that.
Yeah. And what I like about this whole thing is that, you know, at the end of the first Die Hard, the two of them, you know, embraced, but they seem to be, they're embracing more in this movie, mm-hmm. which is somewhat ironic because, you know, on the one hand, we know that in Die Hard 1, their marriage was on the outs. You know, they were having trouble or whatever it is. In this movie, theoretically, everything is fine, as far as we know, because, you know, I mean, he offers to take her to go to a motel, you know, and not go to her parents, and she agrees. So, you know, there's no animosity between the two of them here. So it makes sense to show, okay, their marriage in this past year or two, depending on how long it's been since the events at Nakatomi, that, you know, things have gotten better for them, which is great. Unfortunately, they never really explain what happens between now and the third movie, because in the third movie they're really on the outs. So
right,
you know, but I like the fact that they show the fact that the two of them are literally back together here. So I think it's done well,
at least for now, for today, for this scene. All is
correct.
Well.
Correct. Correct. Later on in a few days, she's gonna have a little scowl on her face, but we'll get there. We'll figure out why that happened. Who knows?
Yeah.
And then, you know, as they're once again embracing, we get a shot of Sam Coleman, you know, with her cameraman, and with you know, the sound guy, and she like points to the camera guy, and like taps him and you know, points in the direction of John and Holly, you know, that he should start filming. And then we hear him say, God, that's beautiful. And then the sound man goes, yeah. And then she looks at them, takes a deep breath and goes, yep. You know, these are people with very interesting things to say. You know, we get a God, that's beautiful. Yeah. And a yup.
Yep.
You know, some things, I guess, just you don't have to state. It's just the way it is. You know, you don't need to go into detail as to what you're trying to say. I don't know.
Sometimes even a seasoned reporter like Sam Coleman can be at a loss for words and just correct. Let the scene play out, you know.
That's right. And she does a nice job of that. So that works. That's pretty much how this minute ends.
Yeah, this is a really key minute. I mean, it's only 1 minute of the film, but this scene and the scene.
Every day we only talk about 1 minute.
Every minute is about a minute, but this minute in particular was a minute. But this is key because going back to the discussion that I think more plays out with the first film, with Die Hard, than Die Hard 2. But the, you know, the perennial question is, you know, are these holiday films? Is this a holiday film? Is it a Christmas film? And I think key for me in so many Christmas films or holiday films is or movies is the theme of getting back home or reuniting with family, where people are separated and they have to get back together again, you know, trying to get, you know, home for the holidays and that sort of thing. And so these scenes at the end just kind of, and the theme plays out throughout the film. It isn't just a tag on at the end, but it really hits home. If there's any doubt, if you haven't picked up on it, you know, these scenes that come, you know, these minutes at the end of the Die Hard films, when Johnny and Holly are reunited, really just drive home that, you know, the theme of, you know, a family of, you know, the couple of love and being reunited and the importance of, you know, being together, and really kind of cements it as a holiday film fare in my mind.
Right, which is actually something that they even try to do in Die Hard with a Vengeance, which we will get to two seasons from now. But the way that it's played out there is the end of the movie, he's going to make a phone call, you know, so that makes sense also. So yeah, so you're 100% right. You know, I figured that after we went through in the first Die Hard talking about whether, you know, getting everyone's opinion as to whether it's a holiday movie or not, you know, just about everyone said it was. so I didn't even bother having to try and think about it here.
Right, it goes without saying. So
that's there right. You go. I mean, and
I said it.
That's right, and this is more or less the way that Holly and John spend their holiday season together. You know, it's not a holiday season in the McLean household if there aren't terrorists trying to kill you.
Exactly.
You know, come on, that would just be a boring holiday season. Come on.
Yeah. You know, some families it's. You know, it's there's that one uncle who always has too much to drink, or some families it's the smoke alarm going off if you know, when something gets burnt in the kitchen, and then some families it's international terrorism. That's just the way.
That's right.
Every family has their own traditions.
That's right. And the McLean, this is the McLean tradition. Yeah. All right. So the script, which we're getting towards the end, we're on the second to last page of the script of for this movie. And so it starts off with, it says McLean says, "Holly, Holly, Holly, Holly in the plane door. Here's this, just as she goes down the rescue chute, ushered by the stewardess controlling their own tears." Okay. I don't know if those tears are meant to be, you know, tears of joy that they've been rescued, or maybe they're tears because, oh, it's so romantic that John is trying to find Holly this way. I don't know. Which do you think they're referring to here?
I think just emotional tears, the tears of release that this, you know, emotional traumatic experience is over.
Right.
I don't know if it's specifically for, you know, John and Holly. Just tears of emotion.
Correct. Okay. Makes sense. That's my take. Okay. And then it says McLean catches her at the bottom like a child and carries her away. And then it says the news chopper crunches down on the frozen earth near the runway. Sam and her cameraman hit the ground running. They see McLean and Holly embracing. And then she's nursing his wounds, hearing his story. The cameraman brings up his lens. God, that's beautiful. Yeah. So they cut out the whole thing about, or they added in the movie, the whole thing about the terrorists and the I love you and all that stuff. It's not in the script at all. You know, it just shows that the script has them embracing. That's it.
Okay. So that's sort of a strange addition.
Yeah, it really is. You know, you wouldn't think that they would ad lib something like, what, you think that Bonnie Bedelia decided to ad lib it and say, you know, they told us they were terrorists. And you go, yeah. I heard that too.
I don't know. Too.
Yeah. Don't know. All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Where Are They Up To This Weekend, which is a segment where I test my guests' knowledge and memory about movies that they themselves have either done movies by minute or perhaps some of their favorite movies, something like that. Now, Sean has done a lot of movies movies by minute style. Some of them in larger chunks, some of them in smaller chunks, but whatever. Mm-hmm. So the question here is, and now I have a list here of 9 movies for Sean. Okay. And
oh no.
And the question is, okay, let's just go down the order, okay? So we're at an hour and 55 minutes has just ended on Dire. Mm-hmm. Okay, what is going on in Groundhog Day at the 1 hour and 55 minute mark?
I don't think there is one.
That is correct.
Groundhog was like 101 minutes, 102.
That is correct.
So Groundhog Day, an hour 40. So that's there, right. Yeah.
Groundhog Day ended 15
that's
minutes.
That's one thing I found. Yeah, that's one thing I found key for, at least for me personally, for success in covering a film 1 minute at a time, is find a film that doesn't have too many minutes.
Okay.
So Groundhog Day was over. The credits were rolling. We're leaving the theater. We're depositing our empty popcorn buckets into the appropriate trash
receptacle. I think you're already on your way home.
Yeah.
Okay. What about Christmas Vacation? What's going on at the 1 hour and 55 minute mark in Christmas Vacation?
Christmas Vacation. See, that's tough. So that's one that I covered. We covered in chunks, in pieces, not by the minute. So I'm not exactly sure how, but I'm guessing it's also probably about 90, 100 minutes. Would it also be over?
It is. It's completely over. You're even further. Okay. You're closer to home. It was an hour and 37 minutes.
See, there are some longer comedies. So just saying, oh, it's a comedy and therefore it's shorter. But it's, you know, it's not like a Judd Apatow, who is notorious for his comedies, you know, stretch into 2 hours. But comedies are generally shorter, closer to the 90 or 100 minute mark. It'd be unusual, particularly back in, you know, the time of Christmas Vacation, the 80s and early 90s, to have a comedy that long. So, all right. I'm 2 for 2. I'm doing good on these so far.
Okay. Now, this one I knew you did in chunks because I did it minute by minute. What about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? What is going on at the 1 hour and 55 minute mark of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
Ooh, that's tough because that one is a little bit longer. But not much. Are the credits rolling? Is this during the credits at 1:55?
No, you're even closer to home. This is a 93 minute movie. So.
Oh, only 93 minutes. Oh,
only 93 okay. minutes.
All right, packed a lot into those 93.
They did well. I mean, again, we know that there was another 2 hours. That was cut out of the movie, 2 hours and 12 minutes that was cut out of the original cut. So, you know, there is a cut where something is going on at the hour and 55 minute, but no one has ever seen it. No one will
probably ever seen it. Yeah. Just tells you the importance of good editing.
That is correct.
In podcasting as well as in the movies. Yeah. So yeah, John Hughes notorious would just let the cameras roll. And especially when you've got, someone like John Candy, who can do a lot of improv. You just let the cameras roll and you run, you know, miles and miles of film or lots of bits if you're doing it digitally these days. And then you trust your editor to turn it into a masterpiece.
That's correct. All right, so we got 6 more, but we're going to do them quickly. So I'm just going to name all 6, and you will tell me if you think which of them are still running at an hour and 55 minutes. Okay. So we got Scrooge, Muppets Christmas Carol, Casablanca, which I think is something you haven't done yet, but it's something you marked that you want to do.
Right.
Okay. This is Spinal Tap, Home Alone. And I know the one that's going to be coming up within the next few months, Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Are any of those 6 movies still running at the hour and 55 minute mark? And if so, what's going on?
Well, I'm going to do a blanket no with one possible exception. So like, you know, Spinal Tap, I know, is 83 minutes. Pee-wee's Big Adventure will be our holiday special coming up at the end of this year, you know, just a couple months after this comes out. We're covering that. I think the plan is doing it in 9 chunks, and that's about 90 minutes. So each chunk will cover about 10 minutes of the film. Casablanca, the perfect Hollywood film is the perfect movie length, is 100 minutes, or maybe it's 101. It's right around there, which again, that's, you know, if you need a lot more time than 2 hours, you must be, your film better be a lot better than Casablanca. My only thing I'm not sure about is Home Alone, because again, there's so much happens in that film. There's so much action. There's so many different scenes. It seems weird that they'd be able to pack it all into a shorter length. Like, I could see that running about 2 hours. I don't remember offhand. That's another one I'm going to guess. Like, you know, were the credits, would the credits be rolling at about an hour 55, closing in on 2 hours? Because the rest of those, I'm very confident that the rest of those are long over, and we're in the car, we're on our way home by the time we reach this point.
Okay, well, I gotta tell you that you're correct and incorrect at the same time, because none of them reached the hour and 55 minute mark. Not even Home Alone. Home Alone is also 103 minutes. Okay, so Pee-wee's Big Adventure is 91 minutes. Home Alone is 103. This is Spinal Tap is 82 minutes. Casablanca is 102 minutes. Muppets Christmas Carol is 85 minutes. Mm-hmm. And Scrooged is 101 minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
So yes, you are correct that every one of these movies that you picked is shorter than this book.
I know how to pick them. So it's only about 12 minutes off with Home Alone, but
yeah, but you're almost home. I mean, depending on how far your way.
I do like to keep them about 100 minutes or shorter. That's my sweet spot. That's about my attention span for a film.
I can understand that. That makes sense. I mean, for me, I've done, you know, two comedies. Both of them were in the 90 minute marks. And then I've done two Diehards, which are both slightly over 2 hours. And then I did The Great Escape, which was nearly 3 hours. You know, that was the inaugural one. So, you know, I might in the future go back to something that is one of my choices for possibly season 8 is something that's a little more than 2.5 hours. But I'm still debating whether I want to go there or not. I might. Who knows? Because it's still fun. If it's a movie that works, then why not?
Exactly.
And the movie that I'm contemplating doing, I think it won 7 Oscars. So, you know, it's something that people, you know, did enjoy back in 1957 for sure. Hint, hint.
Yeah. Hint, hint.
Exactly. All right. So, Sean, do you want to tell people where they can find Sean German?
Sure. You can find me for my podcasting stuff. I'm at nextscenepod.com. for my podcast, Next Scene, covering pop culture one scene at a time. And as we alluded to earlier, we do a holiday special around December, November, December, the end of each year. We've done that for the past, I think this will be the 6th year. And for this year, our special will be Pee-wee's Big Adventure, celebrating the recently passed or recently departed Paul Reubens. And we'll be covering that in not minute by minute, but in 9 chunks. So probably about 10 minutes at a time. And yeah, check that out. It's nextscenepod.com and at nextscenepod on the social media.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. Just reminding everyone, come back again tomorrow. Tomorrow there will be another episode. We will have episodes tomorrow and Sunday. And hopefully Sean will be back to join us for both of those episodes. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and